Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Everyone to the Melanated Roots Radio Show. I am your co-host, Brother Tommy, and sitting here with my co-host, Brother Rio. What's going on, Brother Rio?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much. Just another day in the A.
Understood. Brother, we got a really, really exciting topic that we're going to discuss tonight. We're going to discuss the blurred lines of homosexuality. Look at it from the standpoint, is it choice? Are people born this way? Is the toxic environment that we are living on causing these issues? These are just a few of the things that we're going to discuss this evening. What you think, Brother Rio?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I think we're going to have to bring in some dynamics, you know, of nature. And like you just said, you know, is that somehow being taken, the choice being taken out of our hands so that we don't have control as to what we can really consider homosexual behavior. But as we get into it, brother, it's going to get deep. It's going to get deep.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Today is July 24th, and we have a live show for you today. And like I said, we're going to try to come at this topic from a cultural standpoint, look at it and from a cultural standpoint to see what cultures are practicing certain types of behavior, and it's something that, you know, that they've been consistent with. And then we're also going to look at it from the side where chemicals in the air, water, food, and the role that they play in effeminizing the black male, or all of us for that matter, people of different races as well. So what you think on that, brother?
Yes, sir. I think that it is an overall plan, and there's going to be some collateral damage in other cultures just to, you know, make that plan come into fruition. So I believe your statements are right on, brother.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to give you the floor, brother. How would you like to attack it? I know you have some really interesting things that you want to share. I have some interesting things I want to share. I'm looking at the landscape, and especially being here in Atlanta. And I'm sure this is happening everywhere. We're definitely seeing an influx of homosexuality all around us in terms of gay men. And I'm speaking just for black folk right now. I'm not speaking about any other races. We're seeing an increase in black males and black females, you know, that are black males acting out the feminine part, and a lot of black females are acting out the masculine part. And so we have a lot of that going on. And we also want to, you know, bring this show from a standpoint of we're definitely not beating nobody over the head, bashing any one particular group. What we want to do is discuss the topic from many different sides and many different facets, because I really feel, and I don't know about you, Brother Rio, that, you know what I'm saying, with the explosion of this particular paradigm, I'm really seeing it from a lot of different angles, things that I'm having to take into consideration now that I didn't have to take into consideration when I was growing up. when I was growing up, I myself wasn't heavy Christian, but you know, I had a Christian base just like the majority of black folks growing up in this country, and homosexuality was wrong. You know, the Bible, it was wrong. It's wrong to lay with a man. You know, there was just no middle ground there. That this was not the right thing to do. This was the general synopsis of the entire community for the most part. And now we're in a totally different era, and things have definitely changed.
I would agree with that. And I think that is important for us to kind of separate different time periods and how we think about those time periods. Because the way that the ancestors kind of conceptualized what we call today homosexuality, of course, is different from what we, as being colonized, think of homosexuality, as well as there is a rising trend in the tendencies for same-sex behavior. And as this rise occurs, it spreads out and intersects with many different communities. And as these behaviors become more popular, and we see that these particular groups are rising in power, they are strategically planning their own agenda, which they have a right to, and everybody does. Every group, of whatever, no matter what you're claiming, they have a right to self-determination. But it was interesting that doing my research for this, I found that most of the research or energy that they are putting forth is trying to, how do you say it? They're trying to look at antiquity and acts which we would define as homosexuality with modern eyes. And I believe that they are attributing philosophies that were not in the mindset of the people they are trying to characterize. And by that I mean the ancestors, who were the first beings on the planet. They were master observers, and they recorded a lot of things for their prodigy, which would be us, to live and learn from. A lot of those lessons come from, just like I said before, just observing the world and themselves. And one thing that they definitely understood was duality. So if you got a front, you got a back. If you got a up, you got a down. If you got a left, you got a right. So in nature, they understood, or they came to understand, that certain actions would lead to reproduction. They also came to understand that, well, if these actions lead to reproduction, there are other actions that may be similar, but they don't yield the same results. So as a culture, we don't accept it because we know it's in nature, it's part of duality. You got a front, you got a back. But culturally, no, I don't think that's the way we want to go. And as time progressed, they laid down not laws, but principles and teachings of how to cultivate one's inner self, so that you can vibrate on a higher vibration, and people within a community, and when intermixing with other communities, we can know how to get along with each other. So I would say that you had instances where, for lack of a better term, homosexual actions may have taken place, but the only acceptance was they knew that it was a possibility in nature, because in order to have procreation, then you have to have some kind of deviation or some kind of a variant act. And their recognition of that, you know, was accepting of the principles and laws of nature, which they recorded and left for us. But culturally, I believe they tried to instill in us in lessons and cultivation of the inner being and the soul that, you know, that's not a practice that we should be engaging in.
Let me touch on that for a second, Brother Real, because I want to take that back to when you first started talking a little bit, because I understand where you're coming from instead of duality, in terms of duality. You know, you have up, you have a down, you have a left, you have a right. I understand where you're coming from, but when it comes to certain behaviors, morality and divinity was a big aspect of our cultural norms, that we did things that dealt with higher level morality and things that moved us towards higher aspects of divinity. So even though we know that there were individuals who are born on this realm that are so debased that they in some ways had very animalistic characteristics and were willing to deviate from the norm, but I would like to say and clarify that I have a preference or a mindset that our ancestors, due to their morality, due to their high divinity, understood between acts that were beneficial for our community and acts that were not. And I'm just not sure that the mind of the African from the beginning would take him to a place where he's openly participating in anal penetration of, or something of that nature. I don't see that in our culture, and I don't see that in our people. Although we know there were deviants along the way, I think the majority of African people, the overwhelming African majority people, were not debased in their thinking and have to have laws and many things put in place to stop them from this type of behavior. I do not see evidence from a cultural standpoint that was required, and that it was happening on a mass level to that point. So, yeah, I do believe there are issues at times where you have to show some people, hey, we can't do that. You got to stop that. That's not here. But I'm not sure of the desire for that behavior to exist within us from the beginning.
Well, excuse me, brother. I will be in 100% agreement with you. In particular, I like the way that you highlighted that we didn't govern ourselves by laws. You know, we didn't. It's a difference in so-called Eastern and Western philosophy. We didn't put laws down that people were. We didn't put laws on the books that people were responsible of upholding under, you know, penalty of being jailed, incarcerated, or killed, maimed, things of that nature. We subscribe more to principles and teachings because we realize that one had to be able to govern themselves on the inside. And they have to teach themselves to vibrate on a higher level in order to get along with each other, as well as people outside of the community. And that's the only true way you are going to be able to see, recognize, and accept divinity. So it was about inner cultivation, and instead of trying to control and manipulate one's behavior, like we see once the Europeans come in and colonize. And they start to villainize, criminalize, and they want people to feel subject and inferior and even unworthy and in need of redemption, which are the common themes that we see today.
Yeah, so, and to your point, they needed, you're dealing with Europeans who needed so-called laws or abstain due to a penalty to regulate their behavior, because their obsession with flesh and their debased spiritual level was so low, to where now you're dealing with having to regulate this type of behavior in a true sense of regulating it, because the desire for these people are insatiable, and if we don't regulate it, you know, through the church, then you know we can't lie to the world and give the false impression that we're civilized. Go ahead, brother.
I agree with you. And you also have false teachers who were raised up and taught, and then you know, started teaching, but the things that they were teaching and telling you not to do, they themselves were in fact doing it. Mm-hmm. Which you know, that's just crazy to me. But did you have any final thoughts on that before I kind of give a breakdown of the history of the terms of which homosexuality is by nature?
Go ahead and get into that. I definitely think that's an important preface, so go ahead and get into that, and let's deal with that, and let's get to it.
Okay. Well, the term homosexuality became popularized and was used at the end of the 19th century, and really came into, I guess, common use in the 20th century. It's an adjective, and it was defined as person who is sexually attracted to people of one's own sex. Comes from, it's an English word of origin, so homo, which means same, I believe that's Greek, and then of course sexual. Before it was called homosexuality, it was referred to as paraphilia, and they had 549 types of paraphilia, which was defined as sexual perversion and sexual deviation. Ultimately, they've created a manual, and then the last edition, which was the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, they pretty much narrowed it down to 8. You have 8 specific listings for those particular kind of sexual deviations and sexual perversions. John Money, he popularized the term, and initially it was supposed to be used as a non-derogatory term for unusual sexual interest. He described it himself as a sexual erotic embellishment, or an alternative to the official ideological form of accepted sex. A person named Frederick Solomon Krauss in 1903, he coined paraphilia, and it entered the English language in 1913. The term
Greek. Is that connected to the word sodomy in any way?
What, paraphilia?
Yeah.
Sodomy is one of the specific listings that fall under paraphilia. It's one of the sexual deviations.
Okay, yes, sir. Go ahead.
But he coined the phrase, and it entered into the English language in 1913. And the term comes from Greek para, which means beside, and philia, which means friendship, love. It was created and categorized because psychologists and psychiatrists wanted a more descriptive system than the legal and religious constructs of sodomy and perversion. DSM-3 in 1980. paraphilia, which is recurrent, it has to be intense, sexual arousing, consisting of fantasies, sexual urges, uncharacteristic behaviors, sometimes involving non-human objects, children, non-consenting persons, which we consider rape in modern terms, and the suffering or humiliation of oneself or their partner. Homosexuality was actually removed from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders in 1974, which was around the time that I think some information that you're going to bring up is one of the reasons they did decide to remove it from the actual handbook in 1974.
I'm sorry, brother. Give me a minute.
Okay, you're fine. Let me kick in on what you're saying, because I would like to identify some of the sexual addictions or sexual misgivings that, in terms that are using for certain sexual interests that exist within a certain culture already. So what I would like to do is read this little excerpt in this book called The Sex Imperative by Walimu Baruti, and we're going to talk about some of the different he's going to speak about some of the different sexual concepts that Europeans and European culture have been practicing and participating in a long time. So here we go. Terms identifying European people and their peculiar sexual interests and imperative include, but are not limited to, coprolegia, where people derive sexual pleasure from touching, licking, or eating the bodily secretions of others, including feces, and giving each other golden showers with their urine and vomit, as well as drinking one's own other's urine. Then you have vampirism, which characterizes those who need to drink blood in order to become sexually excited. Then you have saleromania, attaining sexual arousal through looking at and smelling things abnormally dirty and grotesque, such as pictures of deformed persons, watching mud wrestling and wading through sewage. Then they have klismophilia, which is the repeated use of enemas for sexual excitement. Then you have necrophilia, where individuals become sexually stimulated by and engage in sexual intercourse with corpses, and autonecrophilia, where being the corpse or acting dead provides the stimulation. Then you have urophilia, where people derive sexual pleasure from urinating on others or having themselves urinated on. Then you have sadism, where individuals are sexually stimulated by mentally, but especially physically, hurting others through spanking, paddling, whipping, beating, restraining, punching, gagging, blinding, electrically shocking, electrocuting, insulting, cutting hair off, burning, raping, mutilating, fisting, starving, asphyxiating, and other forms of excessive torture. Its complement is masochism or algophilia, which is a sexual stimulation by having these things up to the point of death, done to self by others. Oh, and then you have pedophilia, where children are the one's primary sexual outlet. Then you have homophilia, which is homosexuality, when one seeks out sexual relations only with members of his or her own sex, of which bisexuality, sex being sought with both males and females, is a derivative. So I could go on and on and on, Brother Rio, but I just wanted to basically throw some concepts out there in addition to your definition of homosexuality, to speak to some of the cultural issues or some of the cultural European cultural concepts that have been close to their breasts for a very long time. But go ahead and engage, brother.
All right. Well, just to be clear, just like you were describing, in the DSM-1 manual, they describe the pathological behavior. These are the subcategories as homosexuality, transvestitism, pedophilia, fetishism, sexual sadism, including rape, sexual assault, and mutilation. In the second manual, it only changed slightly. Homosexuality had its own separate categories, and these characteristics became a subset of homosexuality, where you can experience the transvestism, the pedophilia, the fetishism, the sexual sadism, mm-hmm. on and on and on. But they did remove it in 1974. In 1980, when the third volume came out, paraphilia was introduced again, and it was reduced just to 8 disorders. Exhibitionism, fetishism, fortuinism, I have no idea what that is. I didn't bother to look that one up. But you have pedophilia, sexual massism, sexual sadism, and they had a footnote with that one. It had to be with a non-consenting adult. Otherwise, it was no longer considered a disorder. And then you have voyeurism and transvestite and fetishism. So in 1980, you see a definite shift in the mentality of how they were choosing to define homosexuality, from it being a mental disorder to totally removing it in 1974, and in 1980, only classifying it as a disorder if it was between people who were non-consenting.
Okay. Now, okay. Go ahead, bro. I just want to interject something real simple about the DSM. And remember, you and I talked about it. We have to put the disclaimer out there to people that this DSM, this diagnostic manual, really is a bunch of crap. All it is and it's nothing. It's nothing scientific whatsoever. It's just Europeans in the military is where it first started, coming together to speak about all the different things that people could suffer from psychologically, mentally, and all those things from participating in war. So, you know, like I know, these psychological psychological statements that they give or classifications, I just want to put that out there, is really just a bunch of garbage. It's really just a way to control people's lives, especially if they can label you with one of their diagnoses. So the DSM is not a legitimate scientific model. We need to put that out there. The psychiatrists do not have any tools to tell you that there's anything wrong with you. All it is just an opinion. Anytime you're dealing with a psychiatrist, you're dealing with nothing but just an opinion. So I just want to insert that so that people don't understand that, even though we're speaking to them removing it as a mental disorder out of the DSM, we want to also let the point know that we ain't putting no stock in the DSM. Go ahead, brother.
Right. Exactly. at this time, you know, I think they're also operating off of a bigger plan because of the use of the word gay, which arrived into the English language in the 12th century, which comes from the old French word for gay, which mostly came from a Germanic derivative. But its primary meaning was joyful, carefree, bright, and showy. But in the late 19th, 20th century, the word began to be used to specifically mean homosexual. In the 17th century, it started to take on connotations of being addicted to pleasures and dispensations. It came to generally be able to describe someone who was carefree, and he started to take an uninhibited look at the world. So they didn't have any kind of inhibitions, or they were morally kind of loose. They didn't have tight constraints. You know, they didn't line up ideologically with the hardcore religious people or Christians who were gaining popularity. So gay began to be terms that described women who were prostitutes, just with loose morals. Or a gay man at that time period was known as a womanizer. A gay house would be a brothel. Now, a gay boy was called a prostitute, specifically to me. Also, a gay cat was a term for a young man who was apprenticing for particular skills or trade or for protection. And what he was trading was sexual favors to the person who was providing the teaching or the protection. So ultimately, gay started meaning flashy and showy, and then it became specific to homosexual around the middle of the 20th century, especially due to it being a mental illness. So I think what we're looking at was a way to kind of soften the term, because people didn't really identify positively with the term homosexuality, so they popularized something that made you feel a little better once you heard it, such as gay.
Well, hey, homosexuality sounds a tidbit better than sodomy, so you'd think they'd be happy.
Hey, what do you know?
The other word you just used? That was the word prior to homosexuality.
Paraphilia.
Yeah.
Paraphilia.
Yeah, they're trying to make it phonetically sound.
But that sounds like you got something really wrong with you. Paraphilia. What you got? Hold on, man.
Exactly. So they.
You know,
they play in the game of making it phonetically sound good, so that you don't identify with the act every time you say it.
Right, but you know, these the way that has come down in history from the 19th to 20th century, with you know being addicted to pleasures and dispensations to uninhibited by morals or you know, constraints of religion and how one should live their life. You know, people started looking at it as, you know, this is a lifestyle choice that people are choosing. So, you know, that's the way you want to live your life. You're morally loose. You know, you're a loose cannon. You're outside of societal norms, but, you know, it's your choice. So in 1974, they took it off the books. That was the perception, I feel, that they were giving to the public. But we both know that what it really was just, you know, division and confusion. And, you know, it really kind of blurred the lines of gender roles. You know, what was the man's responsibility? What was the woman's responsibility, you know, traditionally? And, you know, how are we supposed to do those roles now in this present time period when, you know, I'll speak for our community, you know, black men are being oppressed, and it's very difficult for us to get a job. Government has instituted welfare to where the woman can make more money with the man out of the house, and, you know, to the present day where, you know, women and black women have more of an income potential than black men do, creating more of a disparity and a kind of reshuffling of gender roles, and how that plays on our psyches psychologically, being able to, you know, adjust and adapt to different roles that, you know, at one time we were socially taught, hey, that's what women do. So, you know, you're not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to be out there, you know, winning all the bread and doing X, Y, Z. So now, yeah, you know, from the perception, you have women acting and playing patriarchal roles, and you have men, you know, kind of in the background being demasculated. But
yeah, well, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to just, you know,
go ahead. Finish up.
I was just going to, you know, segue into, you know, upon further research, we find that, you know, the chemicals and the foods, and along with the trauma and the stress that have been put on to us, also affects our hormonal balance and what we kind of are limited to kind of experience. But I know you have more information on that, but I'm going to let you introduce. So I was just kind of segueing into, you know, the research that you've kind of put together on altered genes, hormones, and how that affects the mentality of our people, as well as kind of robbing us of the choice of a lifestyle, taking nature away and our self-determination away, and kind of making us deal with our own demons on the inside, which are not of our own creation. So yeah, with that, go ahead and kick some of the information that you were telling me about earlier.
Well, what I would like to start with first is culture is the main component to all groups of people, because culture, like Dr. John Henry Clark says, informs you of who you are and what you are and what you still must do. So I believe the main component of this particular behavior boils down to culture, the cultural thought of a people and how that influences his behavior. So what I would like to do is start with a few a little information I'm going to give out about culture and how culture shapes who we are and what we are, and how the culture of obsession with flesh, pedophilia, homosexuality is coming from a particular place, and that people now have control and have their culture on a mass level and in inundating other people with that culture, and that culture is now starting to cause more and more problems within the middle psyche of the black male, black female, and the black family. So I'm going to start out with a reading by Marimba Ani. She wrote the book Urugu. It's a Afrocentric critique of Eurocentric thought and behavior, and she writes this: the germinal principle of the being of a culture, its essence, it is like a template that carries within it the pattern or archetypal model for cultural development. We might say that it is the DNA of culture. At the same time, it embodies the logic of culture. The logic is an explanation of how it works, as well as the principle of its development. Our assumption then is that the Asili generates systematic development. It is ideological in that it gives direction to development. Cultural Asilis may not be changed. So Asili is he's talking about what is the core of your cultural basis, is what she's speaking of. And the Asili of the European culture leans towards obsession with flex, homosexuality, and things of that nature. And I'm going to read a quote that I wrote down by a major player in European culture, Plato. And I think once I read this quote, a lot of people are going to see that eventually we're going to get to the chemicals on the backdrop and the level that they're playing, but in the forefront, we're dealing with culture. And this is what Plato said in his Symposium in the year 385 BCE. So we're dealing with a long time ago. Plato argues that love between males is the highest form of love, and that sex with a woman is lustful and only for means of reproduction. Only with men can the male reach their full potential? And when he, and he's speaking specifically to older men dealing with younger boys. So here we looking at a cultural thought, the leader of this European colony or this concept, the leader who is supposed to be representing them all is telling you that the highest form of love is between a male and a male. It's only lust when you bring a woman into the picture. So we are dealing with a certain type of mindset, and we are dealing with a certain cultural practice, and I think that is the beginning of the onset of homosexuality coming in to influence the African culture. I think it starts with the European culture, Greco-Roman period, into the Roman period, and I'm sure way before that and not documented, that there was a certain type of behavior physically going on, sexually, obsession with flesh, and our interaction and our contact with them, and eventually being subdued by them. Basically, we were inundated with that particular culture and that particular mindset. You feel me, my brother?
I do, and I think that I think that speaks directly to what we opened up the show with, in terms of there being two different mindsets, which today we popularize by saying Eastern philosophy versus Western philosophy. You know, you have the new Greeks on the scene hyping up their own culture and the way that they see their interactions and the way that they want to express love and devotion. Wow.
Let me get this in before you go too far, Rio. There's some more about culture and how it influences people's decisions. Like, for instance, one thing that we wanted to talk about was, are people making these decisions on their own? You know, yeah, I'm choosing to live a gay lifestyle. Are they making this decision on their own? And I think we might want to redress it after I read this little quote. The impact of the group on the cultural socialization of an individual's decision. Isolating particular individual choices, as if individuals develop their desires, skills, and personalities in a vacuum and not families, groups, and society. And whether intentional or not, ignores the social conditioning individuals go through that fits them into the culture. Humans socialize humans. People become who they are through interacting with others, conforming their behavior to a cultural standard. They are educated through the rewards and punishment applied by significant others. All societies and groups socialize their members to conform to their cultural personality. So I'm looking at that, Brother Rio, from the idea that, hey, I was just born this way. This is just the way it is. It totally overlooks the social structure, the culture, and how the culture is informing you on what is right, what is wrong, what's the best way to apply yourself, what's not, how should I look, how should I not look, is this appropriate or is this not appropriate. So we know, if we look at the power of culture, then we have to now look at the idea or the concept of I was born this way, as opposed to I was acculturated to this decision. Tell me what you think, bro.
I'm in agreement, but I believe it has to be prefaced with time periods in particular. If you're talking about during the times of the Greeks, then I'm thinking that it was more of a choice. It was a way that they chose to participate in their culture. And you know that one of the side effects to, I guess, using the boys as women is very traumatizing, and you know, it's been shown through science, Pavlov's dog, and other experiments of that nature, that that the human psyche can get used to a particular kind of stress, and once that stress is habitual, then you know it seems normal, no matter how crazy it is. Mm-hmm. And you know, during that particular time, that was really when the European was trying to exert himself and come to full power. So they were doing a lot of traumatic and stressful things to themselves, but also to other cultures. So at that particular time in history, I believe it was more of a choice, a lifestyle, or an oppression, or a tool, just to kind of seize power and control. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that,
Professor? I feel you. I feel you 100%. And I want to continue along this path of establishing certain cultural behavior and how that is eventually leading to what we're going to kick on real hard in a minute, the chemicals that you and I have talked about. I'm going to read one more thing to you, brother. And this is talking about the European culture and how it creates certain types of relationships with other ethnic groups and how these relationships are going to be unstable because of the psychopathic cultural mind that they have. Okay, it says right here, because we often forget the universal nature of male-female complementary, our scholars must constantly remind us that stable, nurturing, and lasting relationships are abnormal in the psychopathic racial cultural personality, the individualistic state bred by European culture. They are imaginary and without substance. It is the facade, the illusion, the image of stability and mutual love that is most important to a holy political culture. It is the fabrication of deliberate and calculating cultural mindset. And in the attempt to appear normal, they try to write their behavior as everybody. This initiative is found in the assumption that spouses naturally cheat on each other simply because they have excessive infidelity rates. Those thoughts and behaviors which they apparently cannot stop or control in themselves, they have declared normal in their excess. Unlike the mind of traditional African, the European has always sought to blame his thoughts and behavior on forces beyond his control. Bobby E. Wright naturally included this glaring poem with the stability and longevity of nurturing relationships among Europeans as one in a collection of the quality characteristic of the psychopathic racial personality. Now, let me give you an example of the psychopathic racial personality. The psychopathic is usually sexually inadequate, but very limited capacity to form close interpersonal relationships. The European sexual inadequacy psychologically explains why there is a constant projection towards blacks as being super sexual beings and as having no sexual inhibition. Yet it is the Europeans who streak, mate, swap, participate in orgies. All of their sexual behavior is a desperate attempt on their part to achieve meaningful relationships, which constantly, due to their psychopathic makeup, eludes them. White's sexual dysfunction has produced tragic consequences in the black community. They have attempted to achieve sexual gratification by such methods as raping black women, with the rationale being that black women were oversexed and invited their attention. Black men were castrated, with the explanation being that their animal passions had to be contained. The sustained sexual atrocities committed against the black race by the white race has no parallel in history, and there is no scientific explanation except under the rubric of psychopathology. So what that is telling me, Brother Real, that their culture, their way of being, is breeding this type of behavior. And when you have a culture breeding this type of behavior, and now that culture has eclipsed your indigenous culture, you as an African, a black Moor, an indigenous of this land and all the lands, you are now being inundated in an alien culture. And now that you are inundated in that alien culture, you are subject to all the problems, the issues that that culture has now coming over to yours. So we are dealing with a psychopathic culture and a flesh-obsessed culture, a sex-obsessed culture, and we are now become its subjects fully.
I would have to agree with you 100%, brother. So let me ask you this. Would I be correct in saying that their patriotic philosophy would be one of the things that that is at the core of their Asili? Mm-hmm. The man wanting to dominate the woman, because in his culture and from his background, his woman was a liability. Mm-hmm. In our culture, our women were equals. They were, you know, we had matriarchal societies. And him seeing that, along with the accomplishments that we were able to achieve, with that balance, had to destroy that, as well as fear that. But in the back of his mind, he also envied that. So he had to destroy that in order to rise into power. But he wanted to kind of put the illusion on himself to the rest of the world that this is how he operates.
Yes.
But behind closed doors, he's really just doing that same old foul mess.
Oh, willing to do anything. He's willing to do anything. And I'm going to speak to one more thing that speaks to his culture. At first, I was thinking, oh, man, I don't know if I want to go this deep or bring this to the table. But if we have to even take it even a further step to the cultural, the psychopathic cultural norm that exists in this culture, that not only is he willing to be obsessed with physical flesh of humans, he's also willing to be obsessed with that same flesh of animal. So when you start looking at Europeans and their cultural norms with sex with animals, that also speaks to that psychopathic nature within the mind for one to want to even go over there and deal with an animal from that perspective. You feel me?
So you talking about bestiality, right?
That's what absolutely, and it's on the rise. As a matter of fact, there, if you go to the BTR community, there's a brother who there's a webpage called Cynical African, and he tracks all these intercourses that these Europeans are having with these animals, and you know, he basically doing a play on how they talk negatively about us culturally. We're thieves, lazy, or whatever. But on his Cynical African, he shows the dirty side of them. And I remember specifically just seeing an article where a white woman just got arrested for laying up with a dog. And they're having sex parties with animals. It is happening across the board. So not only are we dealing with that extreme obsession of flesh, you're also dealing with bestiality. So we're looking at a cultural concept here that is pretty debilitating, brother.
Wow.
So right here, let me read this to you. Evidence of the origins of bestiality can be found in the crude drawings of the most primitive Europeans. It is as much a part of them as an absence of melanin. Pictures of humans engaging in sex with at least a donkey and a moose, as well as acts of homosexualities and orgies, go as far back as the Neolithic age. Mythologically speaking, it was Zeus himself who turned himself into a swan to have sex with Leda. He also had sexual relationships in the form of a snake with Persephone and a bull with Europa. It requires a special imagination and or reality to dream up and sculpt for public viewing the image of a woman having sex with a bird. That European imagination is still actively and progressively at work. For these and other unnatural sexual acts have evolved down to this day as a part of their rituals and tradition. It is consistently seen down through the ages as a part of their normal interaction with their world. No recorded break from these practices can be found, except when they choose to selectively elude all or some of these activities from their public historical record. I'm going to read this last thing. Part of one of Richard Poles, who wrote the book Black Spark, White Fire, did African explorers civilize ancient Europe make note of many of these presumably primitive and extinct behaviors, like engaging in ritual sexual intercourse with a horse and public performances of intercourse with their mothers and sisters. These immoral and repulsive excessive extremes are still unquestionably evident throughout Western culture today.
Okay.
It's still going brother, on, in other words, brother.
And I feel you. I feel you. I'm going to play, I'm going to go ahead and play devil's advocate for a minute. And I want to see how you are going to respond. Because I ran across an article, and it's by a website called Erasing 76 Crimes.
You want to get to that now, or do you want to get to that after the break? We're going to be coming to a break here soon. Or you want to start a little bit, then we come to it?
Yeah, let me go ahead and start a little bit, because we got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, this is called, this is an article, and it's called 21 Varieties of Traditional African Homosexuality. And it states that at least 21 cultural varieties of same-sex relationships have long been part of traditional African life, as demonstrated in a new report that is designed to dispel the confusion and lies surrounding Uganda's anti-homosexual bill. The following discussion and the 21 examples are from a report called Expanded Criminalization of Homosexuality in Uganda, a Flawed Narrative, Empirical Evidence, and Strategic Alternatives from an African Perspective, which was prepared by Sexual Minorities Uganda, which is a gay and lesbian group in Uganda. In their work, anthropologists Stephen Murray and Will Roscoe, who are they wrote a book called Boy Wives and Female Husbands: Studies in African Homosexualities, and they themselves are admittedly practicing homosexual lifestyles, just so you can keep that in mind. But in their works, they provide wide-ranging evidence in support of the fact that throughout Africa's history, homosexuality has been a consistent and logical feature of African societies and belief systems. Another, Deborah P. Omri, speaks of a long history of diverse African peoples engaging in same-sex relationships. Drawings on anthropological studies on the pre-colonial and the colonial eras, it is possible to document a vast array of same-sex practices and diverse understandings of gender across the entire continent. These examples include, number one, and this I feel is probably their strongest case, one notably explicit Bushmen painting which depicts African men engaging in same-sex sexual activity. Number two, in the late 1640s, a Dutch military attaché documented Nzinga, a warrior woman in the Congo kingdom of Mubundu, who ruled as king rather than queen, dressed as a man and surrounded herself with a harem of young men who dressed as women and who were her wives. 18th century anthropologist Father J.B. Labatt documented the Ganya Shitbandi, presiding priest of a particular tribe, a group within the Congo kingdom who routinely cross-dressed and was referred to as grandmother. I could go on, but you know, you get the gist. You know, the rest of them just kind of echoing that same type of sentiment. I'll let you gather your thoughts, and you know, you can respond to that after the break, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay, we'll be back right after the break.
For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back, welcome back. You're live with Brother Tommy and Brother Mario on Melanated Roots, where today we are delving into the topic of homosexuality. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you can reach us at 866-510-9025. Be sure to hit **. Well, just come into the queue and raise your hand by hitting **, and Brother Tommy or myself will get you on the air so that your comments can be heard. Brother Tommy, before we left the break, I read a few statements that the LBG community is, these are the things that they are researching, and this is the info that they're saying they're coming up with in terms of, the history of Africa. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are Europeans are masters of deception, and you're going to have people who are culturally influenced by the Europeans to basically do their dirty work for them, to go out there and find information that will show homosexuality going back into African cultures as opposed to going back into European culture. So, I understand, that it's out there, and I know that was one of the reasons why you wanted to bring it to the table. Because at first, remember I was saying to you, why would we introduce some information coming from some homosexual women? Obviously they have an agenda, even though they're African, obviously they have an agenda for them to come out and say that we found evidence of these types of homosexual practices within African cultures when it don't exist. And particularly I seen the artwork in which you're speaking to, and it doesn't show homosexuality at all. So it's just masters of deception sending out their proxy races to do their work for them. That's pretty much the way I look at it. And like you said, we're going to have to be on the lookout for that type of scholarship, because it's definitely coming. Because black people or Moors are looking at the state of our people when it comes to this particular issue. It's not sitting right in our mind, and we're looking for solutions and we're looking for answers, and we're doing research, and we've come to an understanding of where this is coming from culturally and chemically. So any conversation in between of those people trying to bring no black folk did it too, or it was on the black record, I really ain't trying to hear that. So that's just my opinion of it, brother.
I do have to admit, brother, when I saw the picture that they are referencing in this article, I have to be 100% honest, man. If it hadn't been placed in my head that, this was what they're qualifying as a homosexual depiction, I never would have came to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. But, looking at it with that specific implant, you look at it and you're turning your head different kind of ways, and you're trying to see how can this be construed,
right,
to a sexual act, period. Sexual act, period. And the longer you mull it over in your head and you try to justify it, and you're looking at it like, well, maybe if you look at it like, and I'm just like, it's just too hard and too difficult. It's like, to me, I thought, they were reaching. But, you know, for the people out there, this is definitely coming to a head to where it's going to have to be dealt with. Whether, no matter what your opinion of it is, we feel that the family needs to be aware of the information that is out there, because one thing that I am noticing is, you know, across color lines, across gender lines, gay and lesbian communities are banding together, and together they are exhibiting pressure and power to get their own agendas and influence out there. Mm-hmm. So the information that they are coming up with, you're going to see this trickle into different avenues of information, whether it be religion, whether it be anthropology, as the article states, whether it be, you know, studies on culture, whether it be school curriculums. You know, your kids are going to have to deal with this information sooner or later, and probably sooner, because, you know, as we know, they're getting more political power. So the family just needs to be aware, whether they vibe with the information or not, they need to be aware that the information is out there and plan accordingly. You know, prepare your kids. If you, you know, you want to teach them something, go ahead and start teaching them now before you have to unlearn them and then, you know, teach them what's really going on. But, you know, just be aware, family, that, you know, things aren't always what they seem, and there's always a bigger agenda at play. And I can see this one playing out. They're laying the groundwork for this to be just to infiltrate different facets of education and things that we encounter within our daily studies. So, you know, moving on, Brother Tom.
Yeah, hey, okay, Brother Rio, we got a call, 404-395. Oh, that's Brother Reg. What's up, Brother Reg?
Hey, how you brothers doing?
Chilling.
Brother Reg. Okay, I want to go to your statement about what this person that did their, I guess their study in Uganda. Okay, for a personal fact, I was in Uganda, and it's truly looked on very badly to be homosexual, to where you will not be beaten, they will kill you. I mean, if you whisper to a brother, I want to touch you, kiss you, or anything like that, it might be your last night on the planet. So what I'm saying is, these people that's recounting these statements are doing it, Mario, I know you touched on that, to try to say that it's not so. But I lived it. I've been there on the planet, because, I mean, they might have some actions because they're more touchy-feely than we are. Like, you brothers might touch you, hold your hand, or touch you, and, you know, I mean, your arm, and hold on to your shoulder and all that, but they're doing it out of love. But the minute you try to throw any homosexual out of any way to anybody over there, it might be your last day on the planet. So I disagree with the person who did the study that it's not real in Uganda, because it is. And but Yosemite was forced to recant that gay law by the pressures of the U.S. and the British money that they was going to pull out the country. Mm-hmm. So go ahead, brother. Speak on that.
Brother Reddy, just for clarification, what they are arguing is that that reaction that that you're speaking of, and that has been popularized in the media, they're saying that that reaction is the result of Western civilization coming down into Africa and imposing their religious views, as well as their colonized concepts of how Africans deal with homosexuality. They're saying that those violent tendencies and outbursts and just general disregard for homosexuals is the result of, you know, the Westerners and the foreigners coming in and imposing that on the people. So now they've taken on that ideology, and they are kind of banging the drum to go back to a different way of thinking, when a time when, quote unquote, they say that it was culturally acceptable. But that's just to let you know, that's how they're kicking the information, and that's how they're coming at it.
See, and that's what I'm saying, because I'm looking at, like, modern day, right? Because I was recently over there. So that means it's like looser now than what it was then, like what the women can wear, what they do. Now they got more clubs, more this and that. So there's more going on. There's more people being more open to the newer lifestyle now than ever. But that's one part of it they will not open to. So, I mean, they're up until, okay, if women want to wear these clothes, you want to do certain things, because back in the day, they had to make sure the skirt was below their knees. It was just, it was mandatory. But now they can come in a different manner. They can deal with that. They can deal with a lot of things that the change of world. Okay, kids are not just eating matoke, which is a banana that they eat. They're eating pizza. Okay, we can deal with these certain changes of the European world, but this homosexuality thing, we will not bring that into the culture. We will not accept it, and it's not agreeable. Even in America, I say up until the 60s, I don't know what exact year, but I know you brothers can find it, it was considered a mental illness. I guess when the people who wrote the laws, their children, their gay children grew up, they changed the laws. But anyway, it was considered a mental illness.
So, 74. Yes, sir.
So I'm against homosexuality, but that doesn't mean that, let me not be human, say not be human, because if we have brothers, sisters, cousins, auntie, nephews, and nieces in your family that might be homosexual, that doesn't mean that you doesn't love that person, because they've been in your family forever. And you never loved the person in the first place because if you found they're homosexual. I'm not saying don't love that person, because that wouldn't be human. What I'm saying is I don't think it's natural. So you brothers can speak on it.
Real quick.
Hold on, Rio. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, brother.
Oh, go ahead, Rio.
I was going to ask you, when you were in Uganda, in your time in Africa, did you ever see someone who was gay or lesbian?
Yes, sir. I seen a homosexual male.
And how was he viewed throughout the community?
He was shunned pretty bad. He was pretty bad. And the thing about it is, we don't know he was homosexual, because he could never pass the act to anybody, because he know he might die. But you see certain tendencies, so you think, yeah, this dude's gay, but he can't let nobody know.
Right. Let me tell you something. And plus, that makes sense. One thing that you said, that if you look at Ugandan culture, or culture in Africa, and let's take Uganda to be specific, because you was in Kampala, and if you look at all the westernized cultural concepts that the Ugandans are allowing in, I think that makes a very strong point, like you said, that even though these Western things are coming in, one thing that they will not budge on is homosexuality. So that really would speak to it even being a stronger strength, or something that Africans stood on prior to European colonialism, prior to the European being able to put pressure on Africans at the barrel of a gun. I'm assuming that the barrel of the gun has a lot more influence than it not having. So if it was staunch and strong before the barrel of the gun, and after the barrel of the gun, we're still fighting it, then that kind of speaks to where we've always been at on that issue.
Brother Tommy, I would say even more powerful than the barrel of a gun would be the forcing of religious beliefs.
Okay. Hold on for a second, Brother Rio. We got another call coming in.
Okay. Let me make a statement. Which we know the Arabs came in and with their religious followed by the Europeans. But go ahead. Welcome, caller,
ahead,
from Hartford. I'm done. That's it. I just wanted to get that last point out.
Yeah, 860 from Hartford. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, y'all. All right. I just tuned in.
We're having a difficult time hearing you.
Hello?
Now we can hear you. Yes, sir. What's your name, brother?
Yeah, we can hear you.
My name is Tyrell. How you doing over there?
Oh, doing pretty good. What's your comment?
Yeah, I'm just tuning in. You ain't taking no one sip of that. All right.
Brother, you're going in and out. You must have bad reception, because we can't hear you. We can't hear you at all.
Okay. I think what he's saying is that he's just listening to the program. So we'll just keep him on mute, brother, and okay. Just keep pushing, Rio.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and anytime you want to jump in and contribute to the conversation, you're more than welcome. But go ahead, Brother Tommy. I think you were saying something to Brother
Reggie. I think we beat it down pretty good. I just wanted to kind of speak about the cultural things that the European that are coming from his culture that are now infecting our culture. I was going to also speak about what European males would do to black slaves on the plantation in terms of the homosexuality that existed on the plantation as well.
We just can't lay it all on the doorstep of the European, because you know the Arabs, they did a lot of damage as well. We don't have
absolutely,
to go into
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, I'm only speaking about the European, because we are inundated in that culture here.
Right. I just wanted to put that on the record. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, brother.
No, you good. You good. I was only speaking to it because we are inundated by that culture here in our ancient land here, and that culture is flowering here and causing certain problems in our culture. And we've been talking about the European cultural mindset from back in the day moving forward. And what I wanted to have a brief conversation about before we get into the chemicals and things of that nature is the European behavior or sexual homosexuality on the slave plantation and the effect that had on black males and our culture as well, because we know they had practices of breaking slaves where they would and also very emasculating them big time. They would pull the slave in front of his family, in front of the people on the plantation, beat him halfway to death, and then bend him over a tree and pull his britches down and anally penetrate him. So these are the things that European males were doing also, and I think that affects the psyche of the black male also in terms of emasculating him. That was a process that they did on the slave plantation as well.
Yes, sir. You know, as well as, you know, there was a lot of psychological damage that went on during the slave process. And I say slave process because that's pretty much when they enslaved our minds to a different way of being, you know, from homosexuality, you know, trauma, to also kind of degrading the men to just be the other extreme, highly virile, and, you know, just being studs, you know, just to produce, you know, offspring. You know, there was no caring, no affection, or nothing. Get in there, make children, you know, come on over here and make another one. Come on over here and make another one. Come on over here and make another one. Until, you know, it was just the norm. And, you know, how psychological damaging that is for a family-oriented community. So, but yeah, brother. But what were you saying? Are you about to start?
Yes, sir.
Are you to read a part of an article?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But yeah, so we definitely wanted to look at it from a cultural standpoint, and so that's what we did for the first hour. Now we're going to move over to looking at homosexuality from a standpoint of toxicity, chemicals in the food, in the air, and in the water, and how that is influencing homosexuality in our community as well. And do you have some sources you want to bring to the table, or do you want me to kind of push forward?
I believe I can go ahead and set up what you're going to some of the information that you're going to bring forward, because we know what pretty much the industrial corporations have been doing as far as you know, manipulating the food, be it, you know, genetic splicing or GMOs, even pesticides or things. nature. There's a book by the title of Fantastic Voyage. And this book was written back in, I think, 2004. And to hear some of the things that they're talking about in this book, and, you know, to kind of look around and see that these things manifested, is truly amazing. And it still talks about things that are yet to be seen, but you can definitely see the groundwork being laid. I'm just going to read a little excerpt where it says, new methods involving traditional farm animals are also being found. Cows produce large amounts of milk, so splicing DNA into the genes that code for milk is a valuable technique. The DNA that codes for egg protein is now being used so that the egg of transgenic chickens, transgenic is defined as containing a gene or genes artificially inserted from a different species, will contain useful proteins. In the near future, we will have farms, spelled PHARMS, where the animals have had their genes altered so that their milk, eggs, or even semen will produce recombinant proteins to help treat currently untreatable or only partially treatable conditions. So in that clip, we see that they're talking about technology where they can alter genes in animals and have those altered genes passed on to the next generation. Now, they claim it's for good, you know, treating conditions and different types of diseases, but we also know that, you know, the Europeans take things that are good and use them for their own twisted plots. I think you can bring that light a lot better with your information, brother. So, you know, go ahead and just start dropping on.
Yeah, what I wanted to do is share this article. It was about a brother by the name of Tyrone Hayes, and I'm sure there are people heard about this. He was a scientist, and you know, from all accounts, a really good scientist. You know, the type of brother that people hype up as a genius before he starts putting out information they don't want to deal with. So he did a study where he was studying the chemical atrazine, and atrazine is a chemical that is being used in the agricultural business, in the agricultural industry. And he was able to identify the problems through a scientific study he had set up with African clawed frogs. He was able to identify the effects that this atrazine was having on these frogs. And he also spoke to how we have similar aspects of, you know, our emotional body, physical body, that are similar to frogs. And he's speaking to how these same things could occur in the human population. So I would like to read this little excerpt, and then let's see where we can take it from here. You ready to roll?
Let's do it.
Okay, in 2001, 7 years after joining the biology faculty of the University of California, Berkeley, Tyrone Hayes stopped talking about his research with people he didn't trust. He instructed the students in his lab, where he was raising 3,000 frogs, to hang up the phone if they heard a click, a signal that a third party might be on the line. Other scientists seemed to remember events differently. He noticed, so he started carrying an audio recorder to meetings. The secret to a happy, successful life of paranoia, he liked to say, is to keep careful track of your persecutors. 3 years earlier, Syngenta, which is one of the largest agribusinesses in the world, had asked Hayes to conduct experiment on the herbicide atrazine, which is applied to more than half the corn in the United States. Hayes was 31, and he had already published 20 papers on the endocrinology of amphibians. David Wake, a professor in Hayes' department, said that Hayes may have had the greatest potential of anyone in that field. But when Hayes discovered that atrazine might impede sexual development of frogs, his dealings with Syngenta became strained,
and in November 2000, he ended his relationship with the company. Hayes continued studying atrazine on his own and soon became convinced that Syngenta representatives were following him to conferences around the world. He worried that the company was orchestrating a campaign to destroy his reputation. He complained that whenever he gave public talks, there was a stranger in the back of the room taking notes. On a trip to Washington, D.C. in 2003, he stayed at a different hotel each night. He was still in touch with a few Syngenta scientists, and after noticing that they knew many details about his work and his schedule, he suspected that they were reading his emails. To confuse them, he asked a student to write misleading emails from his office computer while he was traveling. He sent backup copies of his data and notes to his parents in sealed boxes. In an email to one Syngenta capitalist scientist, he wrote that he had risked my reputation, my name, some may say even my life, for what I thought was right. A few scientists had previously done experiments that anticipated Hayes' work, but no one had observed such extreme effects. In another email to Syngenta, he acknowledged that it might appear that he was suffering from a Napoleon complex. So basically, the brother did exactly what they asked him to do. But when he found the link of the sexual development in frogs that the Syngenta was causing, they basically made his life a living hell. And they did everything they could to turn on him because they just told you that this atrazine is being put on pretty much what they say half the corn that is being produced in the country, more than half of the corn in the United States. Now check this out. Atrazine is the second most widely used herbicide in the U.S., where sales are estimated at about $300 million a year. Introduced in 1958, it is a cheap to produce and controls a broad range of weeds. Glyphosate, which is produced by Monsanto, is the most popular herbicide. A study by the Environmental Protection Agency found that without atrazine, the national corn yield would fall by 6%, creating an annual loss of nearly $2 billion. So $2 billion worth of profit is their reason for putting this atrazine on the crops, even though they know it is causing sexual orientation problems in these frogs. Okay, but the herbicide degrades slowly in soil and often washes into streams and lakes where it doesn't readily dissolve. Atrazine is one of the most common contaminants of drinking water. An estimated 30 million Americans are exposed to trace amounts of the chemical. In 1994, the EPA, expressing concerns about atrazine's health effects, announced that it would start a scientific review. Syngenta assembled a panel of scientists and professors to a consulting firm called EcoRisk to study the herbicides. And then what happened was Hayes eventually ended up joining that group of scientists. And this is what the panel said: although I do not want to make a big deal out of it until I have all the data analyzed and decoded, I feel I should warn you that I think something very strange is coming up in these animals. After dissecting these frogs, he noticed that some could not be clearly identified as male or female. They had both testes and ovaries, and others had multiple testes that were deformed. So when you're looking at atrazine and it being put on more than 50% of the corn, and you know the products, all the products that are being made from corn in this country, and amphibians are, you can't even distinguish between their male and female characteristics. Both of them are being born with testes and ovaries. So we have to assume that this same process is playing out with inside human beings. Go ahead, my brother.
Brother Tommy, we have a comment. I think Brother Scotty wants to jump in on the conversation. Go ahead, Brother Scotty.
Yes, sir. Come on, Brother Scotty.
Hey, good evening, brothers. I actually had a chance to interview Dr. Hayes about 3 or 4 years ago. He's also been interviewed by another program that is affiliated with the Black Talk Radio Network, so I'm well aware of his work. And he was saying that the atrazine was making the frogs, male frogs, change sex, basically. So in taking on, you know, effeminate characteristics. Now, the thing that I wanted to comment on, and this is not a hoax, people. This is real. But the thing that I wanted to comment on is I've heard other people try to use his work to say that there is an agenda to homosexualize the black community, and they cite Dr. Hayes' work. Well, that's incorrect, all right? A key is in something that you read. These drug manufacturers, whether we're talking about corporations dealing with food or chemicals or in the pharmaceutical industry, or even if they're making a product. So they will know from their own testing, which is what Dr. Hayes was hired to do, but they will know from their own testing that it'll have harmful impact on communities. But they will come up with a formula to see, well, we think it'll affect this amount of people, and we're willing to pay out this amount in any kind of settlements to keep it quiet and whatnot. So to me, that atrazine, you said it was worth billions of dollars. So to me, that doesn't point to an agenda to homosexualize the black community, as I've heard some people say, citing Dr. Hayes' work. But what it is that it's just greed. It's a corporation that does not care about the harmful impacts of its product, and rather than pull it, they'll just keep putting it out there. Okay, so I just wanted to add that. There was something else. And how can you target the black community specifically when this is going into all the food? So that's all I wanted to add.
Brother Scotty, no, stay there for a second. I want to ask you a question and engage with you. Do you believe in casualties of your own, you know, knowing that you're going to take on certain casualties for yourself, which will be maybe not as much as the next, but you have casualty amongst your own to get access to the other people? How do you feel about that, Scotty?
Well, what you're talking about is called collateral damage. Okay, that's what you're talking about. That's a military term. That's where they will kill a bunch of civilians just to kill, you know, a so-called enemy. Like, they will target a wedding party to take out one person and kill all the innocents. So, yes, I do believe in that concept, but I don't think that it applies to the food chain, because there aren't any two separate distribution chains and what have you. And so I live, like, for example, I heard people say, well, that's why men have boobs and stuff. That's why you're seeing black men with man breasts now and stuff like that. I live in a rural area, predominantly white, and I see lots of white men who are obese with man boobs. So just based off of history and knowing that these people don't care, I don't think it's a racial agenda here. This is a corporate agenda here. And they don't care about nobody. All they care about is their bank account and what they're making. So in the terms, I'm just talking specifically about Dr. Hayes' work. I think that there has been no evidence presented to prove that the black community is getting a certain type of food that's different from everybody else's.
Understood. Brother Rio, you want to bring that home, and we got a caller in queue. So Mario, follow up with anything you have from Brother Scotty, and then caller 423 from Chattanooga, we're going to be coming to you in a minute.
Brother Scotty, I agree with you 100%. The plan is not to simply target the black community, but collateral damage is part of the plan, because the small amount of Europeans, Tammy Hughes, or white people who are going to be victimized by the plot far outweighs controlling a population of people who are already outbreeding you, despite all the other birth control aspects you are trying to implement, as well as your low birth rate. Through no fault of anybody else's. So, they planned out a small percentage or even a large percentage, because they all they really care about is the people at the top. You know, the people at the bottom and the people in the middle, those are expendable people. But, you know, for the sake of population control and maintaining global control, they do have to find a way to curb our numbers. And I believe that this is just one cog in the wheel of, you know, trying to curtail our population or birth control, along with eugenics and other types of, you know, strategies. Go ahead, Brother Tommy. You can introduce
absolutely.
The caller.
Caller 423 from Chattanooga. What is your name, and please give us your comments, sir.
Yes, greetings. How are y'all doing this evening?
Greetings. This brother, this sounds like Brother Jerry.
Yes. How are you? How are y'all
doing? Well.
I just noticed that y'all was doing the show, and I wanted to check it out. I just have a few questions. I've heard of scientist Brother Hayes also, and I've seen some of his work. And one of the things that I haven't come across while checking him out is the rate at which this dies down. Like you said, it kind of disperses when it's in the ground, but once it gets into the water stream, whether it's reserved drinking water or just local lakes and ponds, how long does it last before this kind of dies off? Because we know there are fish that eat the frogs, and for some of us who live around these lakes and streams, we fish, and we don't know if those fish, those bass, or what have you, eat these frogs, because that was the only animal that I can remember that he said they was finding this in was in the amphibians. So is it a time frame for where this would kind of die off, especially if the frogs are being eaten, or do they kind of mate off and it goes back regular? Because I think that would have something to do with the human population also. So that was just my question.
Gonna jump on that reel. Let me say one thing real fast, Brother Jerry. When you're looking at atrazine and a lot of these herbicides and pesticides that they're using, all these things are flowing into the groundwater, ponds, rivers, and lakes. So it's not just the frog itself that is deformed swimming in the water. You have the chemicals that are latent in the water itself and that are affecting the fish itself without eating a frog and affecting many other life forms within the water. Matter, I just got through watching a documentary where up in West Virginia they're doing all kind of fracking, and they're using heavy chemicals, and the chemicals are running into the waters and the streams to the people who live in the area. And there was this family who lived close to a little river, and they had a garden, and they thought they were eating organic food. They did their garden up. They was putting everything organic, but the water, when the creek rolls, would overflow into their garden, and you know, it was making it grow and making it look good. But come to find out that the toxicity that was running into that water is now in their plants and vegetables in their garden, because it was in the water itself. The length of time, I'm not sure, but these pesticides and herbicides are in the water itself. Go ahead, Rita.
Brother Jerry, and this also goes to Scotty as well. We're dealing with a group of people who are willing to stay in power at any cost. If they can't be in control, they have the silly or the mindset that nobody is going to be in control. So, you know, we have people who are willing to take themselves out in order to take everybody else out if they can't achieve their agenda. So one of the plots and plans that I'm seeing is that as people continue to wake up and they're starting to realize that, you know, I can move back to self-determination, and I can move off the grid. I don't have to live in these cities. I don't have to be subject to these Europeans. I don't have to get food from their grocery stores. I don't have to be relying on that lifestyle, you know, so I can get back to a life that I want to live, that's peaceful, and I can raise my family, and we can join each other, we can live off the land, we can be out in the wilderness. But what we're seeing is techniques and implementation of things that are kind of wiping Mother Nature out, so, you know, that it's harder to sustain yourself away from, you know, under Big Brother's thumb. So they're poisoning the water. You got radiation from Fukushima, you know, and you got fracking. You got all these different industrialized practices that are poisoning the earth. Why is that? I have to think that it's by design and it's by plan. Brother Scott, I see you want to jump in. Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I had, I'm just recalling some stuff I had read years ago. But there are, I can't say a exact number, but they are saying that from the 1950s, because there was no kind of environmental protection agency, any kind of regulations that would protect the water and protect, you know, the soil as well, is that there are so many chemicals in our environment that we just don't know, and we're surrounded by them. For example, like I was reading, like urban gardening. You know, if you want to try to grow some food in an urban industrial area, they sell these kits to where you can test the soil. And a lot of the soil in urban industrial areas that have been heavily polluted, you know, it gets in the food if you plant it in that soil. So, like, the thing that I was reading, it was teaching you how to, you know, make raised bed gardens. You know, that's where you put down tarp over the ground, and then you buy new soil that's uncontaminated, and then grow your garden in your back in your urban environment that way. So I'm just saying that, man, it is. I mean, even where I live in a rural area. You know, we've been fighting fracking here in North Carolina for a few years now, because that's where a lot of people get their water from, is from well water. You know, those of us that don't live in the city, we drill into the ground, tap into an underground stream and what have you. But like the river that I grew up fishing in and even swimming in, I couldn't take my children there. I noticed one time when I took my children fishing one time that the fish was having sores on them, you know, on the outside of them, visible sores. And I was like, no. And I was like, no, we're not swimming in that no more. And so the River Keeper, which is a nonprofit organization that monitors the river, they're saying that Duke Energy from their coal ash ponds have been polluting the Catawba River, and that they're finding carcinogens in the fish. So I don't even fish in that no more. So it's just all around us.
Yes, it is.
Very observant, Brother Scotty. And I just wanted to add on to your comment, and then we have another caller, and then I believe Brother Tommy is going to bring it home as to other ways that they are polluting the atmosphere, so that, you know, they continue to contaminate, as well as kind of alter the genes within our bodies. But Brother Scotty, you brought up the Institute of them creating an agency to protect the environment, when, as you can see, the environment is more polluted than it has ever been. So, I mean, what that really was is just a cover-up to force the people to get a license to do all the things that we were able to do for free. So you can fish, but yeah, you got to have a fishing license. Yeah, you can hunt, but yeah, we're going to need you to get a license to do that. So it was more for controlling the people than protecting the environment. So again, we're seeing the psychosomatic mentality of a people who just need to have control. But Brother Tommy, go ahead. I see that our time is limited, so we can go ahead and get to this caller, and then I'm gonna let you bring it on home.
Brother Reg, I see you there, brother. Go and kick at it.
Yeah, I just got one quick thing. They got to the point to where we're speaking about them putting things in the food to, like, these young sisters on WIC programs, like when they see this is a little boy, they're giving them the Infamil or the whatever, the Similac, and they're putting estrogen in that can. When it's a little female, they're putting testosterone in that can. So it is going in that food, and the WIC programs are doing it in a lot of levels, so it's deeper than we think. I'm going to let you go ahead and bring it home, Brother Tommy.
Okay. What I wanted to talk about before we get about here, this is estrogen-containing foods, which people refer to as a homosexual risk. Okay. Predisposing factors of homosexuality are foods that contain a high level of estrogen, such as chicken, soybeans, and dairy products like milk, that may put males at risk for a change in sexuality by altering the hormone level of estrogen, thus changing secondary characteristic in males, such as enlargement of breasts, which is called gynecomastasia, change in psychological behaviors, erectile dysfunction, and decrease in libido. And let me say that, and I was hearing Sister Zaza Ali kick, and she was saying how a lot of people who eat chicken end up to be have erectile dysfunction when they get older. So, chicken eaters, brothers, y'all better slow it down. Okay, also, so here we go right here. The estrogen is a group of female sex hormones directed to the development of female sexual characteristics. There's steroidal estrogen is cholesterol derivatives comprising a group of structurally related hormonally active molecules that control sex and growth hormones. Estrone is a estrogenic hormone secreted by the ovary as well as adipose tissue. Estradiol is the predominant sex hormone present in males and females. Estriol is only produced in significant amounts during pregnancy. So then you also have non-steroidal estrogen as well. And it ranges from, it is a range of synthetic and natural substances have been identified that also possess estrogenic activity. So check this out. Xenoestrogens are a type of xenohormone that imitates estrogen. This includes commercially raised non-organic meat such as beef, chicken, and pork, dairy products including milk, cheese, and ice cream. Now we have phytoestrogen are plant products with estrogenic activity. This includes soy products, cereals, breads, legumes, meat products, and other processed foods that contain soy, vegetables, fruit, alcoholic, and non-alcoholic beverages. Then you have mycoestrogens are those produced by fungi. These are commonly found in stored grains and silage. So you're looking at estrogen and the role that it's playing in food and the ability that it has to effeminize the male due to a particular chemical that is being put into the different foods that we are now eating. Brother Rio, what you feel so far?
Yeah, estrogen is a big issue within our community because first and foremost they're putting in the diet, they're putting things that break down into estrogen, like soybeans. You can see soybean is a common ingredient in a lot, if not almost all, processed foods, which we're consuming more and more every day instead of eating natural holistic foods like fruits and vegetables and things of that nature. But as you were saying, with the herbicide, now they're spraying the fruits and the vegetables with a chemical that is going to do something similar to transform your genes and to make you more effeminate, as well as we didn't get a chance to touch on it, but some nanotechnology that is also coming into play. So if the family out there, if you guys get a chance to do some research on what's called the
the Morglans disease, Morgellons disease. Mm-hmm. Again, that's Morgellons disease. And that is going to keep occurring, and, you know, we're going to see an influx of that, as well as when you see the history of that, it's going to blow your mind. But go ahead and continue with what you were saying, Brother Tommy, so we stay on topic.
Okay. Estrogen dominance is a hormone imbalance that occurs when levels of the hormone estrogen are too high in relation to other hormones in the body. The most influential biological theory of sexual orientation is that hormones influence the development of neural structures that regulates sexual behavior. The estrogen derived from aromatase actually displaces testosterone to the receptor sites and would cause an effect of turning off testosterone-driven activities. Increased estrogen can lead to sexual dysfunction and has reduced ability to ejaculate. Excessive estrogen level in men may also lead to infertility. So, high estrogen levels in men are also beneficial during gender reassignment because the synthetic hormone will cause female characteristics to develop in men. The synthetic hormone will cause female characteristics to develop in men. You have gynecomastia, which is breast enlargement in men, results from an altered estrogen-androgen balance or from increased breast sensitivity to a normal circulating estrogen level. So do you think that, Mario, would speak to what Scotty was talking about, how they're saying that brothers have men breasts? And he's saying that it results from an altered estrogen-androgen balance.
Yes, it would exactly speak to what the brother Scotty was kicking on. They look slightly different. They're not just regular man boobs. Like when a person is overweight, you know, they're going to have fatty tissue, you know, that of course is going to give them a breast appearance. But when a person has too much estrogen in their diet or they're getting exposed to too much estrogen, the man boobs take on a particular kind of look. And, you know, I used to be a personal trainer, so studying that, you know, we had to do research and we had to be able to tell the difference between just regular fat and when someone has a hormone imbalance. And, you know, that's one of the keys that I was taught to look for. So, you know, what you're saying is very much a reality.
Okay. Oh, hey, Brother Scotty, you got a comment. Go on, Brother Scotty.
Yeah, one last comment. So recently I noticed that the CDC put out some statistics on birth rates in the United States. And they said that, for example, you know, we've had this campaign about teen pregnancies and we want to reduce teen pregnancies. So they're showing for the first time since they started tracking these sort of statistics, which I believe is sometime in the 1960s, is that teen birth rates are at their lowest. Now, they call teen birth rates from the ages of 14 to 19. And some of the researchers or people commenting on the data was saying that this is a crisis. They're saying that this is a crisis in terms of being able to sustain the human population. Now, they did not, from the information I read, they did not state what the cause is of this decline in birth rates in the United States was about. And I wonder if, like, soy products was mentioned, and I read a couple of studies that was done in Europe by scientists who showed that GMO soy products sterilized mammals, the mammals that they were testing it on, like guinea pigs and stuff like that, and saying that within 2 to 3 generations, those generations will be born sterile if the parents had a diet of those GMO soybeans. So No, I haven't read anything that made that sort of connection of why the U.S. birth rate is so low at its lowest point in terms of teens right now. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, but I feel you, Scotty, and I'm about to, and it's about to hit on soy products here in a minute. And I was just getting to that. Let me. It's definitely covered through the soy products as well. So I feel you. Also, some men may suffer from depression and psychological effects as they tend to become more assertive like females. Elevated level of estrogen can cause loss of muscle tone as well. Okay, homosexuality is a romantic or sexual attraction or behavior between members of the same sex or gender. There are different theories on homosexuality. One, Freud believed that men were born bisexual and that they became homosexual as a result of their experiences with parents or others. Two, Ellis believed that homosexuality was inborn and therefore not immoral, that it was not a disease. I don't even know why I even read that. That was a waste of time. I'm sorry, fellas. Estrogen's actions in the brain and the basis for the changes in men. Estrogen can cause dimorphism. It occurs of two forms in the same species in men. Estrogen in males can cause activational reversible effects or hormonal modulated responses, which dictate sex differences to males for cellular and functional level, but are not in themselves true dimorphism. Increased levels of estrogen can slow the production of testosterone in men, thus female characteristics begin to be manifested by males. All right, here's the last one I'm going to push. High levels of estrogen can alter the normal functioning of males, thus predisposing males to manifest female characteristics. Males who have increased level of estrogen may exhibit characteristics of females. Increased estrogen in males can cause reversible effects or hormonal response, which alters the sex presentation of males. High level of estrogens are found in foods like soy products, processed meats, and some of the dairy products like milk and cheese. So it's all over in our food, and we're looking at a heavy reason why, if you look at this rapid increase in homosexuality. And not only that, our girls are bigger, a lot faster, their cycle coming a lot quicker, the development, walking around here 9, 10, 11, 12 year old looking like an 18 year old or a 16 year old or a 17 year old. There's a lot of developments occurring and we got to pay attention to them. Go ahead, Brother Real.
Well, it's also going to contribute to women having more dramatic mood swings and having, being unstable in their emotions, which of course is going to affect the inner dynamics between the black man and the black woman. You're also going to have higher bouts of breast cancer, fibroids, and just an imbalance in a woman. Too much estrogen is just as harmful as it is for men who have too much estrogen and it's not supposed to be there. So it's harmful on both ends. And we didn't even get to touch on the chemtrails, what they're putting in the chemtrails, and how that also contributes to the cocktail of effeminizing of the man. And it kind of puts you in a position to where at one time we felt homosexuality as a community was a choice, and you know, you just choosing to be different, and you should overcome that for the good of the community. You know, it's wrong. It's against nature because we're supposed to procreate. To now we have to consider that, okay, these genes are being manipulated, and this person is dealing with demons within his own skin. You know, his hormones and his own genetics are screaming to him to be and act in a different manner. And we're going to have to decide as a community, how are we going to deal with this? Because how are we going to come together when, you know, we're looking at the next person and, you know, we're kind of judging that person based on their characteristics and how they choose to, well, not choose, but how they're living their sexual life. We're going to need each other in order to rise up. And then after we rise up, you know, I say we go ahead and we deal with that, whether it be to separate, you live your life over there, I'm going to go over here,
You know, we need each other. We got each other's back. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm out. You know, but we really have to decide on how we're going to pretty much handle that situation. What are your thoughts, Brother Tommy?
Yes, sir, brother. I agree. We have family members. We have friends. We have loved ones. We have a lot of people around us who are living this lifestyle and who are expressing themselves in this way. And I agree. You know, when we were raised and you know, especially when you are a manly man or and you look at the world from a certain mind frame, from the masculine perspective, you view it in a certain way. And you were taught that, and you and those who remain true stick with that. Nah, that type of behavior, you're going to have to kick rocks with that, because, you know what I'm saying, this is our mindset, this is our understanding, and this is how we roll. But now we are, like you said, in a brand new environment, and we got to separate the person from the act to an extent. We have to be able to say, okay, we have to look at this from a bigger scale, especially when we take into consideration the chemicals, we take into consideration the brutality that's been put on our people by this group of people, and the sexual behavior that is being taught through their culture, and you start to combine those things and the broken home and the emotional issues that each person is on their path while they're here. Yeah, I agree. We got to get away from judgment and get into a place of understanding and figure out how we can best be used to move this in a direction to where it will start to benefit our future generations, as opposed to fight it, beat it, argue, point fingers, and have it break down to where we have nothing to build from. So, man, we have to embrace all brothers, all sisters, all conscious minds who wants to move towards something positive. Hey, we got to understand where it's coming from and see it for what it is. And keep pushing and educating brothers and sisters. Go ahead.
I think that was well said, brother. And my final comment I think that was very well stated. And I believe that it brings us back to what you were saying before about the silly of the conquerors or the Europeans or the people who are oppressing us, and as opposed to the Assyli that our ancestors would have us adhere to. And I think one of the best examples of that would be the way that they try to impose law upon everyone, whether it be the statutes and codes, which we started to kick on last show, or whether it be the way they choose to approach religion in their Ten Commandments. You know, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. Whereas our ancestors were trying to cultivate us internally from teachings and principles like Maya. When you get in front of the mirror and you're looking at yourself, or you go in front of, judgment, and you say, I have not, you know, or in the morning, I will not, and in the evening, I have not. So you bring an accountability back to yourself, and you are trying to raise your own vibration so that the community can benefit from that. Because if I can treat myself in a godly manner, I'm looking at you to treat yourself in a godly manner. Now we can interact in a godly manner and treat ourselves accordingly, and supposed to spread throughout the community.
Yes, sir.
But that's my final point, brother. I think it was a very good show. You can go ahead and take us on out.
Okay, everybody, thank you for tuning in. We hope you learned something today. And like we said, we like to have discussions, and we encourage you to call in and participate. We thank you very much for listening, and we will be back next Monday at 8 o'clock live at the same time. Appreciate if you would be here. Much love. Peace.